Thank you all for being here. Today we're going to talk about what does foster parent support look like? How can you tangibly do that? How are you communicating to your foster parents? What does training look like? How do you engage your church community to come and wrap around and love on the families? I think that we all believe that we're called to serve orphans and widows, but we're not all called to be foster parents. So what does that look like? If at our church, I really want to love on you, right? How do I do that? So I want to do a little vignette real quickly, and this is going to be my baby, so just bear with me. This is a gross exaggeration of a baby. But Laura and I am in David, so in Tennessee, it's DCS, Department of Children's Services. I don't know what your state calls it. It's probably all very close, similar. Laura's going to be a foster mama, okay? So we're just going to do a little vignette real quick for you. So knock, 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 knock. Oh, Laura, I'm so sorry I'm 3 hours late. I'm the on-call worker. Miriam, and here's her baby who's four months old. I was sitting at Resource Linkage all day, and I don't have any clothes. I wasn't the worker. They just came into custody today. I don't really know anything about them. I think she needs to go to school tomorrow. Are you 14? No, she's 15. She needs to go to school tomorrow. I don't know where she goes. And the baby, he has been crying for the last 2 hours. He might have a dirty diaper. Do you have diapers?
No.
Okay. You're probably going to have to go to Target. And tomorrow, I think there's court. I don't know who the worker is. But somebody will call you tomorrow. Here. And he's been crying, so you probably should take him to the doctor. I don't have a social security. Somebody will call you tomorrow. Thanks. Okay, so is this a typical experience of what happens to our foster families? It's pretty typical, isn't it? So today what we want to talk about, what are some things that we as organizations and people that are coming alongside to support foster parents, what could we have done in this situation? And what do you do in that situation? Because this really, quite honestly, within the last 3 weeks has happened about four times to us. So what do you all do when you get a child and for some reason the Lord has decided that Agape in Nashville is where Hispanic mamas and their babies come? And so we have quite a few right now. And you don't know anything about them. So what are you guys doing when this situation happens, what are you doing to support those families? Just speak it out. Diapers in the office. Awesome. Everyone says, "Oh, I want to bring meals." Just as an aside, Laura's a foster parent. I became a foster parent this year. Please don't ask me to coordinate meals. It's not helpful. Send me Grubhub, right? Send me Grubhub. Because I got kids over here, and I work, and I have a demanding job. I don't want to organize a meal train that you did for me. No, thank you. So that's great. What else? Transportation is huge. Chandler, for the last 6 months, has been trying to say, we got to start transportation. We got to do it. So today what we're going to talk about, training. Okay, you can't do this until you have some skill sets in your toolbox. I want you guys, if you come away with nothing today, think about, we are refilling the toolbox for our foster parents. Okay, that's what we're doing. That's what we're trying to do. We want to give them a full toolbox. Training, support, tangible items that they're going to need, right? So those are some things that we're going to talk about, as well as communication. What does communication look like at your agency? I try not to be too judgmental, but I foster with another agency and we are so much better. And that's not a pat on the back to us. That's just what I'm seeing. So that's kind of the structure of today. Anybody have any questions before we start? Okay. Laura, before she just moved into a new role, she left as our foster parent recruitment an extraordinary teacher into development. But Laura really, training is her gig. So you guys are very lucky to get to speak with hear and receive from Laura. So we're going to talk about training.
Thank you. Okay, so Agape, our mission statement says that Agape exists to strengthen children and families with the healing love of Christ through counseling and social services. Isn't that what we're all doing? We're looking to strengthen the family unit by the work that we do. So this is missional work, but it has to start foundationally. So when we dive in, effective training is the first stop for our families. I could go on all day about how important the pre-service training experience is for the health of our programs. One of the reasons I started doing this work was because of my experience as a foster parent. While I had an effective training, I am a driven person. So I knew that I needed as much supplemental information as possible as a foster parent. So I enhanced my own training experience. I looked for additional resources. Despite that, I still wanted to get that training box checked and move on, right? We're like, how many sessions is this? How many hours, how many nights of training in order to do this? And this is not a paid gig. Like, why am I doing this? A box check and move on. Well, I think our homes need us to set clear expectations on the front end. Do not sugarcoat the experience for your foster parents. Oh, it's going to be amazing, and we're going to support you so well. The first thing we need to do is tell them how hard it is. We have to be realistic with our expectations. We have to remind them that this is work that we're called to, but this is not specifically a role that you have to say yes to. There are lots of roles in the system. They have to decide if they can cut it. Are they capable? We do not want to waste our resources to open homes that can't cut it. I used to work in publishing, and we would joke that our job was to kill it on the table before it dies on the shelf. That means I'm not going to publish a book that's not going to sell, okay? So I'm not going to open a home that's not going to be really great at loving kids and caring for them. It's a waste of our resources. So what we need to do is be very realistic with our training on the front end. We also have to be prepared and be engaging. We have to be engaging with our families. We have to know the content. We have to live the content. I could train with my eyes closed. I know everything about every module. I know the process of module one. I can tell you I'm going to step through this, 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 and this. These are my activities. These are my resources. These are my handouts. I know exactly what I'm sharing. I know it. I could breathe it. Our trainers have to know the material because this, unit one, working with the child welfare system, the process of going to court. Like, this is boring, okay? We've got to be engaging. We've got to share the experience. We've got to share our stories. We've got to tell about what we know so that we can connect with our parents. That also means I'm not reading straight from the material. I am engaging with you. I'm telling you a story. I'm making you feel uncomfortable with prolonged eye contact, right? Because that's how we connect with our kids. We know this experience. This is how our babies grow. This is how our parents grow. Eye contact. We are connecting with them. We're asking them questions. If our parents are falling asleep in class because we're droning on about something that they're not connecting with, we got to get them up. We got to read the room. We got to stand up with them. We got to do an activity. We got to watch some video content. We've got to mix it up. And I know we're bound by the content that the state creates for us if we're working with a state requirement. But we can jazz it up. We can make it fun. We can connect with it because it's important. It is vital to what our parents need as an experience coming into foster parenting. Case studies are really key to what we do. We can do this with confidentiality. A lot of our foster parents, when they come into training, they sign a confidentiality agreement. That doesn't mean I'm going to say, this child, this name, this birthday, or this age, this experience. We're not telling all the details, but we're telling enough for them to understand and to see themselves in that role. This is a situation that might happen to you. helping them troubleshoot and process through what they might experience in their homes as a foster parent. They have to see themselves in the role. Now, that means we're also sharing with them. Amy always uses the experience of like dating apps. On a dating app, you're seeing the best, someone's best representation of themselves. Not that I've ever been on a dating app. I married my husband before dating apps existed. But what they're seeing when a kiddo comes into their home is the worst of the worst of the worst. Well, this kid has punched holes in the wall. This kid has, they're going to smoke pot in your house. They've been sexually assaulted. They've sexually assaulted someone. You know, you're seeing a list of all the things that they've done. It's a rap sheet. That's like a dating app saying, well, I'm a chain smoker and I'm habitually late to everything. They're telling you the worst of the worst. That's what our kids get. So we've got to explain to our parents why they're seeing this rap sheet of behaviors. We've got to explain to them brain development and how trauma impacts the brain development. And if we're not doing that effectively in training, we're not giving our foster parents a fair shake to understand what they need to know before diving into this hard work. Okay? All right, next let's talk about communication. I'm going to pass it off to Amy.
So effective communication starts day one when somebody calls you for an inquiry. Hey, tell me about your organization. What do you guys do? Spirit of Transparency, Agape, is the first one in Nashville, probably in Atlanta too. If you Google foster parent adoption, we show up. So we get all kinds of random calls. And for some reason, the operator sends them all to me. And so that person who gets that first call, right, you are effectively communicating because you're the voice of your program. So I don't know how you have in your organization that gets those inquiry calls, but I would hope that you have that person trained up and that they're kind and that they're helpful and that they know what the process is from today until fully being approved. It's probably going to be 6 months. You're going to have to go through our training process. We're going to do a home study. In the state of Tennessee, which I'm sure in your state as well, foster parenting is a privilege. It's not a right. So you can go through this whole process and you might not be approved. But that doesn't mean you can't serve with us. You could do other things to come wrap around. You also need to make sure that that staff person is great. All the people that are touching your foster parents need to be excellent. They need to know that we shine Jesus brightly here. That's what makes us different. That's the reason why I wanted to come work at Agape, because I worked for the state and I realized that you can give people a place to live and clothes on their back and an education, but you cannot give them the hope of Jesus. So if your people are not missional, and if they don't know why you do what you do, they don't have to quote your vision and value statements. They should know what they are. But everything that they do should shine Jesus very brightly. We also want to make sure that we are excellent. We are communicating excellence through the materials that we hand out. We're communicating excellence through the emails. We're responsive. 24-hour close of business. If you get an email, if you get a phone call, you better respond within 24 hours close of business. The thing that frustrates me the most is when Laura just said on my computer, it popped up, call such and such. She goes, who's that? I said, well, it's an agency that won't respond to one of our staff, and we've put in a referral 3 times. That makes me want to pull my hair out. You don't want to be that agency. Right? Your people can go work, your foster parents can go foster somewhere else. Also, when you think about communication, front load heavy on the beginning when they come to you guys. What I mean by that is let them know what the process is. Laura does a beautiful job of checking in during the home study and process and what that looks like. We try to check in. But also, once they're fully approved, start building their toolbox. Send out welcome emails. Send out, here's some resources that you can be utilizing right now while you're waiting for your first placement. We have some blogs that we love and some authors that we love. Anything from Karen Purvis, TBRI, anything from the Forgotten Initiative, anything from Foster the Family. There's also the coolest, I don't even know how I found her, but she and her husband are Black, and they have adopted white children, and they have a beautiful trans cultural family that they talk about, and she's awesome, and it's, we have to talk about real things. I thought that when I graduated with my master's degree, I was like, oh, I'm so good, I'm ready to go. I knew nothing. I knew nothing. When I got into practice is when I realized what I really needed to know. Your foster parents know nothing. They know nothing. I have worked in the field of child welfare in Nashville for 15 years. I became a foster parent this year. I knew nothing. I was like, what the heck? How can I not know anything? So fill their toolbox up. Send them resources. Send them, there's all kinds. Empowered to Connect is great. Let them start thinking about these things. From day one, we always talk about foster parenting so hard. It's so hard. You better be ready. Your message for communication needs, this is why it's hard. This is a broken, messy system. And you, ma'am, are not going to fix it. But you're going to be a conduit to change for the kids that come into your home. You are going to want to pull your hair out some days. You are going to be frustrated with the court system because a judge is going to have political aspirations, and their aspirations are going to forever change the trajectory of your child. And it has nothing to do with the outcome that's in his best interest. You are going to have to go to doctor's appointments, and DCS isn't going to show up, or whatever it calls in your agency. You're going to have to do so much paperwork, you're going to think that you are now an IRS auditor. The list is going to go on and on and on. But we serve a Lord that's going to get us through this, okay? The Lord has really convicted me, especially this year. We're not only here to serve these children, we are absolutely here to serve everybody on the team that is involved with that child, especially their birth parent. The birth parents are going to be high as a kite. They are going to cuss you out. They're not going to show up. All kinds of things are going to happen. And you know what? Jesus still loves them. And we have to be able to show that to those families as well. That's what hard looks like. You have to be able to communicate to them in tangible ways. This is what hard looks like. So while you're waiting for hard, get really close to Jesus. Really close to Jesus. Make sure you have at least one person in your world that is going to be your person. So that when everything falls out, you can call them. You can just text them and say, today's the day where I really need you to pray. You know scripture. And you can just, for some reason, I switch things around in my head. I don't know what, I'm probably a case study for some crazy something, pathology. But I can listen to worship music, and that immediately will get me where I need to go. So build the toolbox from the very beginning when they come to you guys, so that when they do get that child, they are ready. You've effectively communicated. You've responded immediately. You're respectful. People know that you love Jesus. Throughout the time, you're also, once they become foster parents, utilize social media. We have an Agape foster care group. I don't know who set it up. I had nothing to do with it, but it's great. Foster parents get on there and they talk to each other. We also have a newsletter that goes out every month. I like to send emails, and Laura was like, Amy, the foster parents are sick of getting emails from you because you send one every single day. So we've kind of condensed things that they need to know into a newsletter, and it goes out every single month to all of the foster families. We also celebrate foster parents, their anniversaries of being a foster parent, new foster parents, put pictures of them in there. Talk about things that have been wonderful and awesome. When there is court coming up, post a prayer request. We post prayer requests all the time. We got a big court date coming up. Jesus shine brightly. Please do what's the best for these kids. Also, be sure that your staff, as soon as they, I'm sorry I keep talking to you, you're cute. The very first day when you and I meet, make sure your staff says, what's your name?
Johnny.
Okay. Johnny, I like to text. Is communication, is that okay for you? What's the best way? Should I call you? Should I email? Should I text? Cool. Cool, don't call me either. Okay, so we're going to text, and we know that's the best way to communicate. So now we're all on the same page. We also need to understand that when we're communicating, Johnny, you're going to think everything's an emergency. Johnny, everything is not an emergency. I am available to you, Johnny. But if you could talk to me during business hours, that would be awesome. If something happens, you could send me a quick text if it's 10 o'clock at night. But I probably won't respond back to you until the morning unless your kid's in the ER or you call the police. That's okay. When you're communicating, set clear expectations. It is okay for your staff not to be on 24/7. The flip side of that is you better answer that phone if there is an emergency. Because I'll tell you right now, if you haven't, we're going to have a talk tomorrow. Because your foster parent should never have the police or anything outside of the ordinary, some type of serious incident, and not have somebody from your agency there. So be sure that you're setting those expectations clearly with your staff, that they know, look, we got to be responsive. And during the week, I don't know, every agency's different. People have on-call schedules. People have things that work differently. We only do on-call on the weekends and through the week. It's on you. You have a caseload. You better answer the phone if they call. But if they just want to know, hey, what is that event? That's not something at 10:30 at night, Johnny, that I'm going to respond to you about. But I promise tomorrow I will. And you'll get in an ebb and a flow. You'll figure it out. One of our foster moms, God love her. I actually do love her, but she drives me crazy. She texts me all the time at like 10 and 11 o'clock at night. I am a night person, so that's fine. But then we have another one like Chandler, who starts texting at 6:30 in the morning. Chandler is not a social worker. Chandler has never stayed up late. Well, that's not true. He did stay at the office for one time with a kid for me, and I did appreciate it. I don't set meetings up at 8 o'clock in the morning, okay? That's just not me, because I'm probably getting calls all night long. I don't like when our foster parents call me at 6 o'clock in the morning, but they know I'll respond to them later. So I think it's setting clear expectations and knowing exactly what your foster parent needs is the best way that you're going to figure that out. So front load on the beginning, build their toolbox, get them close to Jesus, and think about what communication needs to look like in various forms. Send out newsletters, utilize social media, figure out if it's texts, figure out if it's phone calls. Any questions about any of that?
Okay, another toolbox resource. You've got a sheet, a handout sheet. If anybody didn't get a handout, raise your hand. We'll bring one to you. EcoMap diagram. Does anyone use the EcoMap diagram as part of your state requirements? Show of hands. One. This is kind of almost an afterthought in our training with the state, but I love this resource, and I think it is an incredible tool to continue to use. So we're going to do this activity together. I want you to put all the names of the people in your household in that big center circle. Just write them down. Everybody who's in your house. If you've got pets that are important to you, throw them in there. Okay? These are people that are in your home. Now, all the small circles around the outside are things that you're involved in. Your extended family, your friends, the church you attend, your workplace, your bunco group, or your old man softball team, or if you're part of a band that plays gigs on the weekend. Those are all the things in the outer circles. So names of people or things that you're involved in. And then you're going to connect a line from the out from the inner circle to each outer circle. If it's a strong connection, it gets a solid line. If it's a weak connection, it gets a dashed line. If it's a stressful connection, maybe your hash marks through it. And then you're going to use arrows. You're going to either point out to the small circle if your energy is being expended to that area, or an arrow from the small circle to the big circle, if that's something that's fueling you, giving you energy. So for me, in my inner circle, it's me and my husband. We have three children, biological kids. We have no foster kids right now, but if I had a foster kiddo, that child or children would be in the middle as well. My outer circles, my work. My husband's a CPA. His work is kind of a big deal, especially just this past season. Whew, we barely made it, you guys. My boys play baseball. My boys also play basketball. My daughter is in theater and choir, so those are on the outside. My daughter has Graves' disease, so we have an endocrinologist. That's an important part of our story. So energy is flowing out a lot of places. But I also have a very tight group of moms in the neighborhood that can help me. I'm not going to make it to the bus stop. Can you get my kiddo off the bus? Awesome. Energy coming in, right? If I am working late and my husband has a meeting, mom and dad, they live in town with me. Mom and dad, can you run Stuart to baseball practice? Absolutely. Energy coming in. Okay, but my parents also call me and say, hey, I can't figure out how to get this connected to the Wi-Fi. Can you come help? I'm like, tech support, this is Laura. How can I help you? It's my parents. I'm doing tech support for them. So energy is also going out. So that might have arrows going both directions. So when our foster parents fill this out, I'm able to say, okay, let's use your eco map. You've got work today. You've got to get a kiddo picked up from daycare to go to an EPSD and T appointment. That's a health check. That's what we call it in the state of Tennessee. Early periodic screening, detection, treatment, something. Long acronym. So they've got to get to an appointment. They're not able to do it. They're like, case manager, can you take my kiddo to this appointment? Do you have someone in your eco map who you can call? That's what I'm going to ask them. Because our case managers, while they're happy to help when there's an emergency, they've got 15 to 18 to 20 kids on their caseload. They can't be running doctor's appointments all day long and still keep up with case notes, still go to court, still go to all the appointments, and serve all these children well. They're not our backup. Case managers are not our backup. Our eco map is our backup. So if we can teach our parents to utilize their eco map for their resources of support, then we're not depleting our staff and wearing them out all hours of the day in order to support the families. What I'm also doing with the eco map is I'm gonna say, name 2 to 3 people in your eco map who I can call on when you get a placement. So I'm going to call somebody in their church, a minister or someone, to say, hey, guess what? Johnny just got her first placement. They're coming tonight. Can you set up a meal train? And can you check in on them? I may also call their best friend who lives down the street. Hey, they got their first placement. Can you wrap around? Can you check in on them? Can you see if they need any resources? I was able to do that. My very first placement, I had a two-year-old and a 3.5-year-old brothers. I had a twin bed. I went to the office to pick up the kiddos. My friends Kim and Tracy and their husbands came with a crib, a toddler bed, put the thing together, brought clothes, sheets, books, toys, all the things. I never even saw them. I came home from the office, room was set up. Our parents need you to help them get these resources in place. And if you do that on the front end, then they're not drowning and trying to keep their head above water to tell you. Because if somebody goes, hey, I know it's been hard, what do you need? I don't know, I'm fine. Because it's harder for them to think through to figure out, oh, what do I need? Rather than to say, hey, you need food tonight. I'm going to bring you food. Do you prefer tacos or pizza? That's easy, right? I don't have to do that. Someone from their support network can. Okay, so that's why the eco map is a very useful resource. Anybody going to be able to use that with your parents? Anybody plan on trying this? Yes, I think you should. It is almost an afterthought when our home studies are put together, but it is something that our training team has really been pushing over the last few months to help resource our foster parents. Okay, it's a really key thing. All right, Amy.
So we talked about what does it take to be a foster parent, right? What does that training need to look like? How are you building that support? And then, oh, by the way, once you become a foster parent, you got to continue to get foster parent training. That makes people, like, literally, especially the dads, I'm not gonna just down on y'all. Do you like do foster parent training? Thank you for being awake. One other thing that's really great, giveaways. You have to have giveaways at your training. You have to have giveaways at your trainings. What we have found is that trainings and events are a beautiful way to get people to come and love on your families, and they don't know what else to do. And then, because they've hosted your training and they've seen those little kids, oh, they don't look like foster kids because they've never seen a foster kid, because guess what? They look the same. They've seen them playing in the gym, and they offered them a meal, and basically your foster family's got a whole day off, and they actually got some training that was really helpful. So I would suggest, if you are not currently asking a church to provide a location, a meal, and childcare, you are missing out. It is a natural way to get people to interact and to start loving on your kids in a beautiful way. Chandler's church has been phenomenal. Our kids love their church the most because they have a huge gym. We also have another church connected with Agape just down the street, has an awesome gym. They provide pizza. They provide cupcakes. The kids play. And kids come in and love on them that they've never, ever even thought that could possibly happen. Oh, look at these kids. Also, I don't know if I can do this, but encourage your families to go to conferences. There's so many conferences in the area where we live. They have a fall conference, they have a spring conference, go in person. Pick things that you're currently struggling with. Don't just look at the list. If you really are having trouble because you have a three-year-old and you don't know how to de-escalate that three-year-old, there's probably a training for that. Go to that training. You're like, I have 15 hours I have to get. Well, you know what? I was remembering that Johnny, your name's Johnny, right? Johnny, you've really been having trouble because you can't get your teenager up in the morning to go to school. Fostering teens is huge, and there's a really good training that's coming up. We also have utilized the Empower to Connect training. Bless you. The Empower to Connect training is phenomenal. They use Karen Purvis, a lot of the TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Interventions. We like to do, I didn't create it, it was there when I came, Super Saturdays, where basically you take a Saturday and you knock out a lot of training, and you do it at a church, and you have childcare, and you have meals provided during the day. And so get those trainings, Empowered to Connect. We just did it in May. If you go on to Show Hope's website, they basically host it. It's really, honestly, it's a big bang for your buck. It wasn't even $200. And all our foster parents were able to get that content, and it's fabulous. Also, in the state of Tennessee, we have a level system. We are considered therapeutic for some of our kids, a therapeutic foster home. Our staff within the last 2 years has been trained in TFTC, which is Together Facing the Challenge. It is a wonderful evidence-based program out of Duke University. It's basically a train-the-trainer coaching model. So that is an awesome resource if you could look at that. Also, if you just go online, you don't have to spend a lot of money, right? Everyone has, with their licensure, they're going to have some kind of trainings. You're going to have to do your medication administration. You're going to have to get CPR certified. You're going to probably have to do some kind of prudent parenting or, you know, the whole brain. That's not what it's called. Strong brains. Learn about trauma. You have to do all those things to stay up to date, but you can be so creative in the ways that you offer trainings to your foster parents that they actually can get something out of. When we, our whole staff went to CAFO, Christian Alliance for Orphans, last year. Super expensive, great opportunity for your agency to raise money for your staff. Not only do your foster parents need to be trained, your staff need to be trained. And they need to continue to be fed into. Not only are we feeding into our foster parents, you need to feed into your staff. Because you know this is hard work. And we learned so much at the conferences that we've gone to. One of the booths that we had, we didn't have it, goodness gracious. One of the booths we saw at CAFO is an agency called Finally Home. And they created these sensory bags. And y'all, they were so expensive. If Finally Home watches this, I'm not down in your bags. They were great. They were just too much money for us. So what I did was I looked at what was in it, and we bought the devotionals, and then we came back and we created the sensory bags on our own. So it's just, if you look at their website, it's finallyhome.net. This is an awesome devotional, Finally Home Emotions Bible Study for Families. And it goes through being lonely. And as a family, you can talk about what that looks like from a biblical perspective. You can talk about being angry. You can talk about being mad. Our foster families love these. There's also a devotion just for foster and adoptive families that we got. So this is in our sensory bag. Whenever our families complete Together Facing the Challenge, that's what we give them. We give them a sensory bag. There's some kinetic sand in the sensory bag. There's a poppet. There is some kind of, we either do a string or we'll do a stress ball. Target, all of our foster families know Miss Amy loves Target. We have like stress fruit. Like there's just really creative stuff. And then we recently had a partner that made kind of a sensory bag for us. So rice is cheap. Super cheap, and then you put items in it, and you put it in a box or like a bowl, and then you encourage your foster families. Think about times when you know that your three-year-old loses it. When does he lose it the most? Usually transitions, when we're getting in the car, when we're coming home, when we're sitting at a restaurant. Take your poppet. Take your stress ball. He can sit and put his hands in this while you're waiting in the car. So those are just things that the bag can go everywhere with you. Or when you notice that they're starting to amp up, what are some things that have worked? We keep these around the office. They're downstairs so that they can, during supervised visits, if they need some ways to get some anxiety out, there's always a poppet or a stress ball. Kinetic sand was down there. It is no longer because... It went everywhere. We're getting the 5-minute mark, so we're going to wrap up. Any questions? I'm going to shoot it back over. Any questions about training or how to create a sensory bag? Okay.
Okay, we also think it's really important for you to build networks. Your churches are key in this. You've got to help your church partners know what to do. So that means offering training opportunities for them. Training them in a small piece of what your foster parents know will help the teachers, Sunday school teachers in particular, really need to know how to help de-escalate a child and help understand why does a child lose their mind. Well, they've got some triggers in your church environment. So helping them understand that these are not bad kids. These are kids who've gone through really hard things, and their brains are different. So we've got to teach the people in our networks, and we're going to fly through some of this other stuff real fast. It's also important for you to offer training to them to understand this. This can be on a small scale, but provide them resources and opportunities. Give them this little handout about supporting foster and adoptive families within the church. The little circles on the outside show you some specific things that they can do, specific areas where they can serve. Wraparound can be just having someone to write notes or call and check in, but it can also be bringing meals or helping with lawn work or helping with transportation or providing respite, giving your families a break. What are we already doing that we can call churches in to help with? Amy has really worked hard over the last year to launch a partnership that we have with Care Portal. Anybody using Care Portal yet? Oh, we're going to show you a quick video so you can see about Care Portal.
Every year, more than 4 million children teeter on the brink of entering foster care. And more than 400,000 are in foster care, most of them for preventable reasons. The foster care system impacts more than you can imagine. 50% of the homeless, 60% of girls and women rescued from sex trafficking raids, and 75% of those incarcerated spent time in foster care. The foster care system is ground zero, the place where our efforts will have the absolute greatest impact on our communities. And here is the good news. So many of you care about these issues. Churches and agencies and businesses, community leaders all want to help. What we're missing is connection, the chance to collaborate and put our networks and resources together. Care Portal uses technology to make real-time care connections for kids and families in crisis. This platform helps us make the most vulnerable children our priority, which makes them the single most powerful source for uniting and healing our communities as we serve together. Here's how it works. Caseworkers with child-serving agencies encounter needs of children in crisis every day. They enter vetted needs into Care Portal, which immediately makes local churches and community members who've joined the network aware, giving them a real-time opportunity to respond. This platform is designed to equip the local church to be at the point of care for these children and families in need. And it allows for the entire community to work together on any request. So whether it's one church that responds or a community of churches and businesses and individuals working together, Care Portal makes vital connections possible through an easy-to-use platform at your fingertips.
So many of our children and families in child welfare are isolated. They don't have a support system. Care Portal can provide not only the physical needs for the children and family, but can also provide a support system and relationships.
I look at the Care Portal as a platform for us to be able to do ministry across denomination lines, across racial lines, across social economic lines. And the mission field is in our backyard.
Sometimes, connection means meeting one need at just the right moment. At other times, connection starts life-changing relationships. When you join Care Portal, you're saying yes to connections that change lives, transform communities, and can reverse the foster care crisis in our nation. That yes makes children the priority, because every child matters, and what you do matters. Children have the power to change us.
I think Care Portal is going to be really a big game changer for child welfare system. We are able to say, hey, we've got this need, we've got that need, and it goes to our church partners. We've vetted the need because we know that the family that is in need. So we can say, hey, we really are going to need diapers. We've got to have diapers. We've got so many kids coming in. And churches say, we got you. And they'll respond to the need, and they send diapers. We've got to get a bed because this grandma wants to bring her kids home. And that's a barrier to that child going home. So we can say, here we go. Let's meet the need. We've got this one in particular. This child right here, it's a 14-year-old. This is her second baby. Her first baby did not survive. This one was born at 24 weeks, barely over a pound. And we've got church members who are taking her to and from the hospital each day so that she can bond with her baby. They are meeting the need. And Care Portal has helped us connect, okay? I hate to fly through the end of this content because it's really important, but I think that what the takeaway is, we're doing hard work, but we need to involve as many people as possible in the work that we're doing. A lot of the families that come out and say, hey, we want to be foster parents, we got to say, that's great, but it's hard work. Are you okay with hard work? You've asked to serve. We got started a smidge late, so is it okay if I go a smidge over? Let me show that last video. Okay, sorry guys. That's okay. I'm a TikTok addict. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's an algorithm, so I really just see stuff about child welfare because I watch all the stuff about child welfare. This is a nurse Missy. There's one not so nice word in here, but I think this is important for you to see her perspective. It floored me, made me cry the other day. So I want you to see this.
Y'all, I do not get out much. So when I do that, the Lord, let me tell you, he will take that opportunity while I'm in the grocery store or I'm in traffic. He will take that opportunity for me to learn some major life lesson. So I'm in the grocery store, of course, and I'm in the soda aisle and I'm bending over, picking up sodas and putting them in my cart. And this woman just near ran me over and I looked at her, you know, because I wanted to be sure she knew how peeved I was. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, and I didn't say nothing. I was like, And then I went, I was in the pharmacy section and here she comes again. She cut me off and I just looked at her. And again, she looked at me, she said, I'm so sorry. She was obviously in a hurry. And I was just so irritable. I was just irritated. Even thinking about it, I remember how just, I was like, really? I was so offended. Like, thou hast offended me with thy, you know, buggy. And I was like, Lord, I'm just irritated. And God was like, you know, why are you so irritated? What's the trigger here, sis? And I said, you know what? Why do I always have to show grace to people? Why can't I be offended ever? Why do I always have to show compassion? Why I always gotta, you know, bow down and turn the other cheek and all of this? And he said, did you not ask to serve? So yeah, but you know, I want to serve my clients, my patients, my husband, my family. He said, it don't work like that. I said, so I'm just supposed to be walked on by people. He said, no, baby, it ain't got nothing to do with them. It's between me and you. And he reminded me that how we serve and how we treat others really, truly has very little to do with them and very much what God has asked of us, especially when we have specifically said, God, how may I serve? Send me. Whom shall I send? Send me. Okay, well, then I'm going to send you and you better get ready. I'm not sure how many times I'm going to have to keep repeating this lesson, but you can be sure I'm making a TikTok about it every time. How we treat others has very little to do with them and more to do with how we serve God and how we serve kindness and love and how we are mindful of the energy and the vibration that we're putting out. That's what we're responsible for.
That hit me pretty hard when I saw that a few days ago. Because what we do is hard and we have a right to be offended sometimes, right? But we also need to yield because we are representing Jesus to the foster parents, to the staff members that we serve. So that's going to mean a lot of hard work. That means I don't have time to answer another phone call. I'm going to call them back. That means, oh, I got to hear you complain about this or that or the other. You know what? They've had a hard day. They just need me to be there. So it's a lesson that I needed to hear. I needed to hear it. We have immense opportunity to show Jesus to the children that we serve, to their biological families, to our foster parents, to the Department of Children's Services. because they need Jesus, but we do too. Okay. Okay. Chuck said we had 5 minutes, which was 2 minutes ago. So we have 3 minutes. So any questions? We would love to hear your questions. We're doing a training tomorrow specifically about recruiting and retaining. So we'll be doing a deep dive into that tomorrow. But we think recruiting is of the utmost.
To those on that fourth row back there, I'll talk to Amy about throwing things around the room after the conference here. So, hey, just real quick. So our foster care program has grown by over 200% over the last 3 years, and you can see why. Because of these two young ladies and the way the Lord's blessed us with some incredible foster families. I do want to go back and mention one thing that I do think is, from the executive director standpoint, about answering that phone up front. And we live, as we learned today, and as we all know, we live in a very different culture. And I would encourage you, and I'm sure if you're not the executive director of your organization, your executive director would make sure you are prepared in that phone call up front for the questions that will be coming, the challenges that you will receive. Make sure that person answering we're an organization with a statement of faith, which means our foster families have to sign that statement of faith, which means there's certain families that are not going to fit as Agape foster families. And you need to prepare those people up front that are answering those questions to answer those in accordance with your policy, in accordance with your statement of faith, but also in a way that is loving, kind, and compassionate to those people who are calling in and sometimes are calling in and they already know what your answer is. And so make sure that you are prepared and the folks that are answering those calls are prepared for those questions and those call-ins. So thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Amy and Lori, for this. And y'all have a great rest of the day.